Brady gets a 5-year deal to replace Sean McDermott, who was fired after 9 seasons. New Pittsburgh Steelers head coach Mike McCarthy was introduced today.
My heart is full. My focus is singular. It's time to bring another championship back to this great city.
The Pittsburgh native says he would definitely want Aaron Rodgers back at quarterback next season, adding he thought Rodgers was a great asset to the team this past season. Says he's spoken to the quarterback, but understands Rodgers will need time to make a decision on whether he wants to play next year. The Jets and offensive coordinator Tanner Engstrand are parting ways after 1 season, while former Giants head coach Brian Daboll likely headed to the Titans to be their offensive coordinator if he doesn't land the Raiders head coaching job. That's according to multiple reports. At the Australian Open, third-seeded American Coco Gauff lost in the women's quarterfinals. Carlos Alcaraz onto the semis on the men's side.
Fox Sports Update on KPRL, brought to you by Deeds Bar & Grill at the Paso Robles Golf Club. Great food, great view, great people. Prime Rib Monday, Taco Tuesday, Wine Down Wednesday, and specials Thursday through Saturday. Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with your agribusiness update. Well, the U.S. chicken industry is on a decades-long winning streak. Steady growth in consumer demand, coupled with efficiency gains in broiler production, have powered the sector's remarkable growth the past 30 years. According to a report from Cobank's Knowledge Exchange, the near-term outlook for broiler production remains exceptionally strong, but opportunities for increasing output are more limited. Higher capital costs, tight labor availability, and increased local regulations have stalled expansions. Well, in a letter to Congress, ag groups sounded the alarm about the economic crisis in rural America. The letter describes an existential threat looming over many farms, stating America's farmers and ranchers are facing extreme economic pressures that threaten their long-term viability, leaving an alarming number financially underwater. The letter also says the reality of record high input costs and rapidly declining and historically low crop prices has culminated in negative farming margins. Well, China has purchased about 12 million metric tons of soybeans, according to Reuters, which meets a U.S. stated pledge to purchase that amount by the end of February. The 12 million ton mark was met last week after bulk purchases by state buyer Synergrain and state trader COFCO. Hitting the 12 million ton mark will likely boost trader and exporter confidence that China could also meet the broader goal of at least 25 million tons through 2028.
Increasing your almond yield can seem like a tough nut to crack, but it doesn't have to be. Protect your crop with Marivon fungicide at Bloom for added resiliency against frost, long-lasting broad-spectrum disease control, and proven yield results. See? That wasn't tough at all. Marivon fungicide, number one at Bloom for all the right reasons. Always read and follow label directions.
Today, we're talking with aphids and whiteflies about Safina insecticide from BASF.
We just got nailed with it.
So tell us, how you feeling?
Really, really weird.
And you still want to devour this field?
No way, bro.
There you have it, folks. Safina insecticide is specifically engineered to disorient aphids and whiteflies so they can't eat. And when they can't eat, they can't destroy.
Help protect your alfalfa from aphids with Safina insecticide. Always read and follow label directions.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with today's Agribusiness Update. Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
This Fox Business News Update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Stuart Varney, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages are mixed in afternoon trading as investors digest earnings reports from big U.S. companies while awaiting a decision on interest rates, which comes tomorrow afternoon. The Dow is retreating sharply, led by United Health. Its shares are plunging 19% despite posting a quarterly profit beat. Health insurer stocks are tumbling today after the Trump administration's proposal for Medicare payment rates next year failed to deliver the expected hike. However, the Nasdaq and S&P 500 are on track for a fifth day of gains led by technology. Tech titans Microsoft, Meta, and Tesla will be reporting earnings after the closing bell tomorrow, followed by Apple on Thursday. And UPS has struggled lately amid a choppy economic environment, but its stock is rising 3% today after delivering better than expected quarterly numbers and a solid outlook for the year. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Hey, I'm Mike Slater. My dad passed away at the age of 63. He's out of nowhere. Had a stroke. Super hard, obviously, for the whole family, but my dad had life insurance. This is why I have life insurance for my family, for my wife and four kids. And the best place to get life insurance is ethos.com, because you can do it in 10 minutes. And there's no medical exam and no blood test, just a few health questions. Get life insurance in 10 minutes so your family is protected. Ethos, E-T-H-O-S, ethos.com/Mike.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
American Legends, next on KPRL. Brought to you by Davis Body Shop.
If you're under the impression that federal food stamps are available only to the elderly and the poor, you're in for a surprise. I'll be right back.
Reagan, in his own voice, is brought to you by K-Brush Concrete, serving the entire Central Coast for more than a decade. Call Kevin at K-Brush Concrete, 423-4033.
If you've had the experience of standing in the checkout line at the supermarket next to a strapping young fellow with a big basket of groceries who pays for them with food stamps, and you're worrying how long you'll be able to find the cash to feed your family after you've paid your taxes, you've probably wondered about the food stamp program and how it works. You're not alone. Plenty of other taxpayers are beginning to ask the same questions, and with good reason. One irate father called me from another state last year. He makes $100,000 a year. Why, he demanded to know, was my state government providing his son with food stamps while the young man was going to college in California? Well, the fact is, under present federal regulations, a full-time student living away from home can have food stamps at the taxpayer's expense, even if his father earns $1 million a year. One young woman in California took just enough college courses to avoid the food stamp work requirement. She was studying to be a witch. There's no minimum age for food stamp recipients either. In California last year, a special task force investigating the program found cases where 14-year-olds ran away from home and lived in communes on food stamps. Even strikers are eligible, which takes the government out of its traditional role of being neutral in labor disputes and puts it in the position of subsidizing strikes. Obviously, something's wrong. Food stamps began in 1964 as a plan for distributing agricultural surpluses to the needy. Fewer than 400,000 persons received the stamps. Today, 13 million get them. That's an increase of 3,150% in 10 years. We've long since used up that agricultural surplus. In fact, today our problem's one of shortages. But according to a recent congressional report, in another 2 years, 60 million Americans, one out of every four, will be receiving food stamps at the expense of the other three. Like some other government programs that grew out of our compassion for the needy, food stamps have gone out of control. In a nation that's taken pride in self-reliance for 200 years, we're actually encouraging able-bodied young men and women to go on the dole. Yet the food stamp program was never intended to subsidize college students and teenage runaways. Some politicians react to every attempt at welfare reform as if it were an attack on poor people, closing their eyes to the reality that such programs become less efficient the older and bigger they get. There hasn't been a government program yet that couldn't benefit from periodic review and reform. That task force I mentioned came back with a long list of food stamp abuses, thefts, red tape, and counterfeiting, all of which added up to a hefty chunk of the annual $4 billion bill the taxpayers pay for food stamps. They made 32 recommendations to tighten eligibility, improve security, and streamline the program. In California, we adopted what reforms we could last year, but food stamps are a federal program, so most of the changes will have to be made in Washington. They could begin by moving this welfare program, for that's what it is, from the Department of Agriculture, where it now takes one-third of the department's budget, to the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, where it belongs. Will Congress do anything about this mess? Well, maybe that's up to you. A group of congressmen calling themselves the Steering Committee have studied that task force report and are preparing corrective legislation. Whether it passes will depend a lot on whether enough taxpayers tell their congressmen just how they feel about a program that's supposed to help the needy, but which actually redistributes the taxpayers' earnings to subsidize a lot of people who'd just rather not bother earning the money themselves. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Reagan in his own voice, brought to you by K Brush Concrete. Anything to do with concrete, from a 5x5 walkway to a 500,000 square foot foundation. Call 423-4033.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. We have two more attorneys in studio today. We have David Duringer, Protective Law Corporation. We are going to touch on estate planning and trust maintenance for family protection, but the first thing I'm going to talk to him about is his high-tech lynching in Morro Bay. Dave, welcome to back to Protecting What Matters.
Barry, thanks for inviting me. Yeah, happy to talk about anything you want to talk about, or the callers?
Yep. Got it. Go ahead. And at 1 o'clock, we have Dan Dow, our Slo County District Attorney. I want to get his take on the anti-ICE protests and violence gripping Minnesota, human trafficking months. It has been human trafficking month here, and its relevance in San Luis Obispo County. When we're also going to talk about fraud schemes, prevention, awareness, and a whole lot more. You can call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Dave, before we get into your lawsuit against the city of Morro Bay.
And two police chiefs.
Yeah, we'll get there. Yep. Tell our audience again, we all hear your commercials every day on KPRL, and maybe some other stations too, I don't know. But tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get into the law, and you focus on estate planning, and then how did you make the turn into this case against Morro Bay and the police chiefs?
Well, I did run ads on another station for a while, but okay. KPRL works a lot better.
Okay.
So I've got a very different estate planning practice. I have a book that I co-authored with a bunch of Wealth Council colleagues, and I wrote the chapter on what is a gun trust, and my foreword in my book mentions the fall of the Republic, how to restore it. Most estate planning books don't start off that way, it is a unique practice that I've got, and that's been forged in a lot of fires that I've had, including situations like Morro Bay. But I'm happy to talk about estate planning. But I think the lynching, that what I call the high-tech lynching of Dave Duringer and Morro Bay, I think that does provide kind of a good backdrop for focus.
Tell us a little bit about this. How did this all unfold? And I'm particularly interested in why you call it a high-tech lynching.
Well, you probably remember Clarence Thomas, the hearings back in the 80s, he called it a high-tech lynching that he faced, and paraphrasing Winston Churchill, there's no greater exhilaration than the lynching without result, or so to speak, paraphrasing. But Clarence Thomas, he's a great hero of mine, great justice, and not to make any comparison there, but yeah, I felt like it was a high-tech lynching. Conspiracy was actually required to be alleged.
Okay, well, tell us what happened, Dave. Tell us the fact sequence of how this all came about.
Well, I ran, just a little bit of background. I ran for city council in Grover Beach back in 2020. And I had a unique campaign method. I went canvassing the entire community, and I gave red gun trainings using a red gun, an imitation gun used for training. Not a real, it's not a gun. It doesn't expel a projectile, but it's a piece of plastic that's under California code is legal to use it in public. You can display it in public. So I went all over Grover Beach. It was great. No issues with cops or anything, but you know, and people would take videos, share them on Facebook, etc. I actually did pretty well. I think I was brand new to the community, but I on election day I was only 10 votes behind first place, and you know, with the mail-in ballots, I you know fell to third place, and you know that goes. But so I did this. You know, my main issues were COVID and 2A in the 2020 race, 2A Second Amendment. And so I wanted to give people an exposure to the type of training that I had for defensive handgun concealed carry. And I did that on their porches and driveways in full view of their neighbors. And it was a very pleasant experience running. I loved Grover Beach. We decided when Biden was elected that we needed to do something with some money we had set aside. So we bought a place in Morro Bay, moved up there. And I did the same thing. I ran primarily COVID and 2A were my issues. 2A because they passed unanimously a storage ordinance 644, which was unconstitutional. And
was that a gun storage?
Mandatory gun storage. I went again door to door, same method, red gun trainings on people's porches and driveways. Everybody told me that. Well, very few people even knew about the ordinance, and it was passed unanimously by council members, and no one planned to follow it. It's just stupid. But, some people, may not realize it's stupid, and gun training can help them realize that it's stupid. So that was part of my campaign, the gun training. Rent control was also an issue. Battery storage, obviously. I was opposing that before it was cool to oppose it. The rent control, we can get into that later, why that's important to talk about. But, in my past, I represented landlords. I'm very much against rent control. And you can tell how that went over in Morro Bay, right?
Right.
So that's kind of a quick backdrop. Morro Bay was totally different. I'll just say that.
Well, tell us about Morro Bay.
Yeah, I was shocked when I ran Morro Bay, the organization. It's like this. It's the same population as Grover Beach, roughly similar. Of course, Grover is more like Orange County, where I came from. We moved up in 2019, evenly split between Republicans and Democrats. Morro Bay, obviously, is more left-leaning. But the city, everything is so tightly organized. All these different organizations, events, League of Women Voters forums, candidate debates. Multiple debates and forums like that. So it was a different experience running. I had to be an expert on a lot of things I really wasn't expecting to have to be an expert on.
Kind of like a radio talk show host.
Exactly, huh? Right. Yeah. I guess I wouldn't know, but all I know is you do great. I'm impressed with the organization and research that you do. So
anyway, were you at a city council meeting when the alleged experience happened, or were you at a candidate forum?
No, that was actually at a League of Women Voters forum. It was on October 5th of that year, 2022, and it was a very interesting. I had fun doing it. People were very impressed. They came up to me very warmly, thanking me afterwards about how clear and unambiguous I was about the conservative positions that I took. No one expressed any fear at what I did. Everyone, thanked me.
And what was the alleged bad deed that you did, Dave?
Okay, so the incident was I displayed a red gun. I drew and displayed a red gun. The same red gun that I was going around town with on people's porches. I drew that during my speech. It was actually during the closing comments as I was reading from my written speech. My eyes were buried on the page. And I quickly drew from a waist holster strong side, and drew up to the ceiling and back down on the table. The whole that whole display took less than 2 seconds, about a second up, second down. So well within the, I train my students to fire a controlled pair in less than 2 seconds, but there's also reaction time involved, right?
So what was the context that you did this? Just showing the kind of training that you were doing?
So I drew, before I drew, I was explaining the red gun trainings that I was doing around town and why that was important. My need for volunteers. I wanted volunteers to help me spread the training. As I drew, I explained that this is the red gun that I'm using is just a hunk of plastic. So anyone paying attention to me would know, that I was just drawing it's a training implement. It's a piece of plastic used for training. So, anyone that you're responding that might shoot me, had better explain my demeanor at the time, which was obviously not threatening. The police chiefs that I sued admitted that there was nothing illegal or threatening about what I did. It was completely within the law.
And nobody complained?
Except
for maybe the Tribune.
No one complained at the end of the meeting. There were two written complaints to the city. And I think one of the written complaints was from someone that was not even at that forum. They saw the video on social media. By the way, I was banned from social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, Nextdoor, Two Cities, banned in 2021. So as this was getting out of control of social media, I had no way of responding. So the other written complainant, I believe she was the same person, same as one of the people that spoke against me at a city council meeting. I'll just call her Mobile Home Linda, not using her last name, but that's actually, she's probably well known in Morro Bay for that. She's been using that for 26 years as of that in 2022. She's a longtime activist in favor of rent control and mobile home parks in Morro Bay. That's why I mentioned rent control is an issue at the forum. So she was one of the speakers against me. At that forum, I stated my opposition. I stated my
Dave, I want to stick to the
sure.
So let's move forward here. All right. So basically, you after all this settled down, I'm understanding from what you sent me that you apply for a concealed carry weapons permit. And because you live in the city of Morro Bay, you have to go through the police department, correct?
That was the case. As a result of my case, my situation, they decided to get out of the permit issuance business, and now they contract like most reasonable cities.
But at that point, you needed to go through the city of Morro Bay.
Right. I already had an application in process before I ran for city council.
And then basically it looks to me like, based on the letter that you got from the police chief at the city of Morro Bay that's dated back in December of 2022, they kind of use kind of a technicality to kind of deny your request, correct?
I was denied. So I applied for CCW with Morro Bay. They denied me based on lack of good moral character, okay? And I had actually emailed the commander who became chief right kind of in the middle of all this when my permit was denied. That's why I got judgments against both of them. But I'd actually emailed her on July 1st of 2022 before I even applied for CCW, letting her know that element of the issuance law was unconstitutional. And I sent her a link to an article that I wrote that got an extreme amount of traffic around the state. Thousands of people were relying on my article to have arguments to argue with their sheriffs about issuance, because my article responded to AG Bonta's letter to issuing authorities. Basically, after Bruin, he was quick to remove the good cause requirement, but he sent out a letter urging issuing authorities to actively use the good moral character requirement to deny permits.
It's pretty vague, isn't it?
Well, it's vague. Not only is it vague, but under Bruin, you cannot use subjective criteria. Mm-hmm. Bruin prohibits that. So it was obviously unconstitutional. In fact, the state legislature actually got rid of that requirement. They revised the CCW law soon after my permit was issued. My permit was denied, basically a year later, the law was revised. So I actually did get my permit issued by the sheriff soon after I contacted Morro Bay, tried to get them to change things, but I applied with the sheriff. There's no problem getting a permit through them, and I got a permit issued under the same law, which had the...
So tell, you know, we've only got about three minutes left in this segment. Can you tell us how this lawsuit that you filed against Morro Bay and the police chiefs, what was that all about?
Okay, so first of all, I want to make clear that nothing I say here is, it's just all based on my allegations and the evidence, and I urge people to go to my site. They can download my 92-page complaint and see everything, public records requests I made, see it for themselves. There was never any judgment on the merits. So my case is, I do consider it a victory, but it's not a decision with an opinion, that kind of thing. It's nothing you can rely on in that regard. But I do believe that you can actually use my complaint in your own lawsuits, many of you. I think more people should be doing that if more people did instead of waiting.
And what was the basis of the lawsuit?
Well, the basic, I had five claims of relief. Denial, first one, obviously the central one, is denial of my right to bear arms. Second Amendment and 14th Amendment. Second is retaliation against my offer of firearm training by a political candidate. Also under the Second Amendment, 14th Amendment, a couple of Seventh Circuit cases, Ezell 1 and 2, specify there is a Second Amendment right to train. Third, retaliation against political speech by political candidate, 1A and 14A. Fourth, denial of right to procedural due process, 14A. And then fifthly, denial of right to equal protection, 14th Amendment. So most of my complaint, I drafted the complaint. Most of the Second Amendment stuff in there is from me. I did have help from Harmeet Dhillon's firm. She's now actually the head of the Second Amendment division. She's AAG for Civil Rights for U.S. DOJ. Her firm was very, before she left for Washington, very helpful to me in the First Amendment realm. And the 42 U.S.C. 1983 is the statute, Civil Rights.
So we got about less than a minute. So you got a settlement against the city.
Yeah. Because I already had a CCW at that point from the sheriff, mine was not, I wasn't trying to get a CCW. It was a suit for money damages.
Right.
And so it was a Rule 68 offer that I accepted. So it was a money judgment based on their offer that they made. It's a formality that most defense will offer. And I accepted it, but I did it in a way because they were not giving me what I really wanted. And I refused to agree to confidentiality. I refused to do an off-record settlement. So I do have judgments against the city and personal judgments, forever permanent judgments against both police chiefs as a matter of public record. I don't like specifying the amount because if I did, you probably wouldn't be impressed because Second Amendment verdicts are not that hot large. But I'll just say it's enough to buy a nice new car. I don't need a new car. I got a nice...
Okay, Dave, we're up against the break here. So basically, just real quickly, you won the settlement and you know, your record is clear and you're great at it because everything's good. That's how you're using this money to fund your gun training, right?
Yes, part of it, yes.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that on the other side of the break. So, folks, give us about 2 minutes and we'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Listen to this real Paso Robles Glass customer where they installed 23 replacement Milgard Tuscany windows and two sliding doors.
Steve Eklund, Craig Smith as an architect and a proud and honored client of Paso Robles Glass. Hey, the boys are doing a great job. They just left. Everything is just fine. Extremely good crew. You got that crew is exceptional. They're all hardworking guys, very careful, very cautious. All is good. I think they have one more day tomorrow, wrap it up, the finish work. I'd like to set up a time to come up and see you next week. I've got a big, big project I'd like you to look at for me. Whatever works on your end, just wanted to let you know, Steve. Take care. Bye.
Get rid of your old broken windows and get new Milgard energy-efficient windows and doors with Milgard's ironclad lifetime warranty.
We ask Nick Medeiros, CPA in Atascadero, what's new as we prepare our taxes?
We've got some big upcoming changes courtesy of the big, beautiful bill that was signed back in the summer. How it's going to impact folks and answering questions on that, because it was passed so fast. There's going to be some things that people like and maybe some things folks don't like. They did address some key issues that were the fallout of the previous, call it Trump bill, back in 2017. So they did address one big issue, which was the salt limitation. That's been increased, so that's going to help some folks coming up here. And I know the president touted three key factors he wanted to do with no tax on tips, overtime, Social Security. They got two of those, subject to income limits, because there's always income limits and phase outs on things. And there was a kind of a compromise on Social Security. So those are going to be probably the major points of that bill that affect a lot of people.
Nick Medeiros, CPA, 805-466-7249.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Dave Duringer, attorney, Protective Law Corporation. You can call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Dave, you mentioned that I do want to get to your gun training program, because sure. I think this whole thing is how you're funding that. But you had said there were a couple of more critical points of law that you wanted to point out about your case.
Yeah, so there's a lot to this, and I hope people go to the website to look more for more, but I'll just kind of hit the high points. So basically, to recover against an official, normally officials are not sued in their individual capacity. You got to show that they knowingly violated clear legal authority. And to recover against the city, you've got to show conspiracy to violate your rights. So I had good, solid allegations and evidence against all of them. And the conspiracy, I'll just kind of hit the high points on that. So there was an email on October 9th, I believe, from Councilman Jeff Heller. She's replying to one of these complainants, I think Mobile Home Linda, I'm not sure. And he said that he emailed saying it was definitely a concerning moment, and I look forward to the city's response. Real or fake guns should never be allowed in public meetings. This has never happened before and will be a future agenda item of mine at Tuesday's meeting. So City Manager Scott Collins was CC'd on that and forwarded the email to Chief Cox. Chief Cox replied telling Collins, the manager, that Dave Duringer has a CCW app in process with Morro Bay. I didn't use a firearm in the incident, so the only reason for Cox to mention that is to implicitly propose a denial as a response that Councilman Heller wanted. So that is key evidence, I believe. Obviously, again, there's no judgment on merit, so these are just my allegations and evidence. But I think that's strong evidence of conspiracy, especially when you consider what happened soon afterwards. We scheduled a meeting at his office at the department, and I thought it was going to be a respectful meeting with me as a candidate I'm pro-police and, to talk about police department policy. But no, it was an interrogation of me over this incident. And so I won't go into the details there, but at the end, he strongly urged that I attend the city council meeting that night. Well, I was going to attend anyway because I wanted to speak against the ordinance, storage ordinance. But so I went there, and as soon as I'm walking in, this guy, we're both walking into the building, Veterans Hall. He looks at me, shouts, "It's the star of the show." And this guy, you know, okay, what's that all about? You know, I had a feeling, but I go in there, and you know, the that guy that said that, plus that lady, the lady, Mom Linda, they were speakers. They said horrible things about me at the meeting. I've got videos of them, what they said, on my website. You can look at, along with a video of my red gun draw. A lot of what they said is basically repeating what the chief said to me. So there's some tie-ins there. I don't have time to go into, but a lot of what was said there is additional evidence that there's this conspiracy to put me on showcase like that. And so that, I think, was critical to bring out, but not much time on radio to
take. Well, yeah. You had a 95-page complaint, so...
And the other just quick point on the substance. Okay, so that's the conspiracy against the city, the allegation I have to make against the city. So as far as the police chiefs, I had a lot of evidence. That email I mentioned to Watkins, the commander and ex-chief, explaining why the good moral character... prong is unconstitutional, but the denial letter that the chief sent, the way it's worded shows, it was worded very deceptively. They twisted the language of Bruin, this controlling Supreme Court case, and actually the language they used shows that they had knowledge of the full language that they left out. So that's important, recovering against them, okay?
So do you think there are any... long-lasting implications as far as gun rights in the county over your lawsuit?
Well, there's no precedential authority. Mine was a settlement, entered as a Rule 68 settlement. That's a public judgment against them forever, but which, you know, is bad character, basically. On CalGuns, I've suggested people use my case to, you know, go after. There are plenty of... even though the law was improved, and we do have something that's close to shall issue now. The problem is the legislature under SB2 tried to place a lot of limits off, places off limits, and that's all going to be litigated. There are still things in the issuance law that are unconstitutional, and the places regulations are unconstitutional. So there are a lot of ways for people to sue for damages, and that's where I think you can get them. I mean, you can't rely on the gun orgs to do this for you. There's a lot the gun orgs have dropped the ball on, and I don't have time to get into that.
Right. Bit. Real quickly, so you funded some, you're doing some firearms training. You just completed one last week, I think, at Atascadero.
Yes.
Tell our audience a little bit about that, and do you have plans to do any more?
Yeah, so I'm really excited about this new format I have. I've been doing the free gun training for really decades.
And you spent a lot of time at Front Sight.
Yes.
Doing your own, getting trained up yourself. Yeah, so you have some great
credentials.
That's
where all my training is from. You know, over 20 years of training at Front Sight. And I actually have a guy helping me now who he was actually a supervisor at Front Sight, and he's very knowledgeable on all this. So we've actually improved, he's helped me improve my curriculum, and it's much different than it was, very thorough. So for anyone missing Front Sight, there's a lot of people that miss it, Disneyland for gun owners, you know, you can get a dose of that. I'm doing this new event, almost monthly, almost every month at the Atascadero Chamber. It's a 4-hour event, which actually it's a mix of my estate planning webinars, which I give live, one on, you know, general planning. I hear the music.
How's the best way for people to learn more about this, Dave?
My training page is guntrust.org. That's the best place to learn about my free training.
Okay. Not to mention your estate planning services, correct?
Right. That's protect.life.
All right. Dave, thanks for coming in and unwinding this story for us. And folks, we'll be back with Dan Dow on the other side of the break. So stand by.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton. It's